This episode of Breaking Brave is brought to you by Crank Coffee, the newest member of the Neal Brothers family. Crank Coffee is a new Canadian whole bean coffee brand that is certified organic and fair trade, founded by the Neal Brothers, Peter and Chris. This brand was influenced by cycling, coffee lovers, and experts. Check it out at the Neal Brothers online shop and use our coupon code BRAVE for 20% off your first Crank Coffee purchase. Enjoy. And I wanted to mention that if you would like to connect with me directly, you can always do so at marilynbarefoot.com or breakingbrave.show. I see and answer every single contact personally, and I would truly love to hear from you. Welcome back to Breaking Brave. I'm Marilyn Barefoot, your host. Tara Milburn's unique and brave journey has led her to develop a nuanced understanding of success. She's the daughter of an Irish-born entrepreneur who raised himself up from extreme poverty. Tara has always understood that business is not just about making money. Her business, Ethical Swag, is a sustainable branding company that supports other purpose-driven businesses in their efforts to make a positive impact on people and the planet. It is the culmination of Tara's lifelong desire to use business as a force of good. Please welcome Tara Milburn. Tara is one of the most inspirational people I have ever had the pleasure of communicating with. And yet she's in a business, which generally in the past has a bit of a bad rap in my estimation. So I want you, Tara, please say hi to the world and introduce yourself and put some context around that crazy introduction I just gave.
I don't disagree. My company being Ethical Swag, and you know what used to conjure up for me was trinkets and trash. It's not an industry that I dreamt one day I was going to build North America's number one sustainable promotional products company. That was not a dream that I had when I was a kid. And here I am. And it's really interesting to me as we build this company and we have big dreams and we have big goals. It's not actually about the products and the logos. It's about how we are building the business and how we show up and why we are building the business. And it's about the people that are behind it. And that's the people that are working with me at Ethical Swag. It's our supply chain, because it all matters. And so once you put it in that context, it kind of doesn't matter what the business is. It's why you're doing the business. And that's what sort of gets me excited.
I love it. I think probably, Tara, everybody in the world understands what the word swag means, but maybe you could explain it. First, translate it, because I have one translation. You may have another. Translate it for the world. Like, what is swag?
The easiest answer to that is it's logoed products, logoed merchandise. And we know that logoed merchandise is everywhere. I have not come across an organization, whether it be government, not-for-profit, technology company, healthcare, it is everywhere. Swag is everywhere. And when I was trying to come up with a business idea, I knew that I wanted to build a business that was a different kind of business. Kind of didn't matter what the business was. And when I looked at this particular industry, I saw opportunity because that's my business brain. And so that's how I ended up in this business. Some people would say swag is SWAG, stuff we all get. I've heard that definition. I've heard the trinkets of trash. But at the end of the day, it's a really powerful marketing medium, quite frankly. There's a reason why it's everywhere. There's a reason why everybody does it, because it works as a marketing medium. And as we've become more and more virtual in our lives and in our corporate lives and how we show up, something tangible that reflects your brand is actually even more valuable. But we can't do it in the same way that we've traditionally done it. So we're looking at this industry. We're looking at the products that bear your logo and saying, what story are you telling with that? And let us help you tell a story that aligns with your values.
I have something on my wall here that I want to talk to you about, which is a recent phenomena that you have also witnessed in your career is growth at all costs. Can you talk about that a little bit, which is why you are doing so well and your company is so, so special and unique?
Yeah, so I've been around for quite a while and I've watched the landscape of how we build and run businesses change drastically in the time since I started. You know, when I started and when I was growing up, people worked for companies for years and years and years. The companies had longevity. If you look at the top 100 companies 100 years ago or 50 years ago, they'd been in business for a long time.
Yeah.
And now the pace at which things change is so fast because of technology and all kinds of things. But we've sort of got caught up in that with the building of our businesses too. And I think that the pace of change is fast from technology and from all the different things that we go through in the last number of years. But we've thrown the baby out with the bathwater and we've said, okay, so growth at any cost. It's been normalized to grow quick, raise a bunch of money and exit. And then the bottom drops out of it. And it's like, oh, well, I got my money. Well, that money didn't come out of nowhere. It's actually come out of somebody's pocket. So for the people that win, there are people that lose. It's not just people, it's our earth. It's the planet. There's a cost to doing business and there's a cost to growing at all costs. And I think that we need to be a little bit more thoughtful and have a longer term view of what success looks like and make decisions and find partners that align with us so that there is that patience to make sure that we make decisions today that don't have a negative impact in the future, because I've seen it all go to shit in the last several years.
Yeah. Thank you. So maybe walk me through it, Tara. So if I'm a client, and because you started with pens and everybody can relate to pens that have something said on them, or written on them, logoed, whatever. If I'm a client calling you at Ethical Swag, what goes on in the inner workings now of Ethical Swag about this conversation that a client's called, wants 1,000 logoed pens for an upcoming conference to give away to people dropping by their trade show booth?
So interestingly enough, customers can call, no problem, but we've set it up because from a technology standpoint. So what I found in this industry, it's really complicated to have a website. You're not just selling a pen and it comes in three different colors and you just, every single one of them is customized. So if you think about the complexity of that, what's happened in this industry and the way this industry is structured largely is technology companies that have a big, big database that all of the suppliers plug into, and then the promotional products distributors can just take a skim, like put their logo on it, and then they pull in products from all of the different suppliers everywhere, but they don't actually know who the suppliers are. They don't know who's making those products. They don't know where they're coming from. It's just, it's all about access to whatever, like, oh, we can give you 1,000 options.
Yeah.
And so when I looked at this particular industry and for the pens, I was like, okay, how do we make it accessible? How do we make it transparent? How do we do this without raising millions of dollars? Because it's extremely expensive to build a custom website. So when I looked at it and I said, we need to find pens or whatever products, we need to know where they're coming from. We need to know if they meet a base criteria for social compliance and environmental stewardship and where the country of origin is and what it's made of and all those sorts of things. And I didn't want to go the route of the industry because it was very difficult to then vet who are the suppliers and where are those products coming from.
Right.
But I wanted to use technology as not, number one, as an enabler and also for access.
Right.
I wanted to make it really accessible to people because we love in today's age to hit the easy button.
Oh, yeah.
And especially the next generation. Like when I say to my kids, why don't you just phone them and ask? They're like, phone? So I'm kind of circling back to you. Like, I know we call them phones, but
Yeah. You know, my apologies. I guess I show them my age. If I'm a client and I'm calling you to order a thousand, first of all, you've got to be 8,000 years old if you're calling me, because nobody calls anymore, right?
Some people do. But this industry was set up in a way that we had to sort of look at access, right?
Yeah.
And then I also looked at it and said, okay, we need to be able to offer options that meet our customers where they are from a budget standpoint, from an accessibility standpoint. So yes, I can say, look at this fabulous Canadian-made 100% recycled pen. And we have those, by the way. But it might be at a price point more than this pen that's made in China.
Yeah.
But if we know that this pen is made from recycled material, the product origin is, or the manufacturing origin is China, but we have audits on the manufacturing facility and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. If the dollar pen meets your budget, then we need to meet you where you are.
Yeah.
So that's what we've done. We vet our suppliers around social compliance, environmental stewardship, product quality, product safety, and supply chain security. We look at those things. And then we, on behalf of our clients, say, here's a good, better, best option. And here's one that's sort of at a price point that's lower. It might not be recycled or whatever, but know that it's coming from a good place.
Yeah.
If the story, like we're very much about storytelling, if the story that you're telling or the person that's receiving it, you need to go into the better or the best category, we have options for that as well. But there's no judgment if your budget doesn't allow for the best category. And I found that when I did my research into the industry, people said, oh, I'd love to do sustainable, but I can't afford it. And I'm like, okay, well, that's not going to get us anywhere. Like, we need to meet the customer where they are with no judgment, because it still matters where it's coming from. And that's how the company was designed. So you can go to our website, you can look, and you, like, to your point, if I call and say, I want 1,000 pens, you can literally go to the pen section and see the options there. And we have little emojis. We make it fun. I was like, okay, we're operating in sort of some very serious fields around human rights and environmental stewardship and all this sort of thing, but swag is fun. So let's make sure we make it fun. So we use emojis, and we have little emojis. It's a one emoji is good. One smiley emoji is good. Two smiley emojis is better. And three smiley emojis is best. So at a glance, you can see. And there's like a little woman emoji. That means it's a woman-owned business. There's a maple leaf. That means it's Canadian made. There's a little bee, and it means that's coming from a certified B Corp. And so we've just sort of made it really fun, but really visually easy to filter what you're looking for.
I have a million questions. Let's just start with the first that drop into my brain right here, Tara. How on earth did you figure out how to audit manufacturers around the world? So there's a company in China that's producing pens. If you want to have them in your portfolio, I understand the word audit, but how does it take shape in the world that you're working in?
Oh, absolutely. And we all know when you're running your business, you're really good at certain things and not good at others. I do not audit. That's not where my zone of genius is, but there are people that do, right? And you need to know where to look, what to ask for, what are the criteria, and all those kinds of things.
Right.
So that's the heavy lifting we do on behalf of our clients.
And so how many items could a client like me calling, no, maybe emailing, choose from? I mean, how wide, how broad is this selection area?
So it's interesting. When I sat down, it was just me and my desk and my name, Ethical Swag. And I'm like, what does ethical mean? And how are we going to build this business? And what does it look like? And having had some communications in my background, I recognize you have to make it really simple for people to understand, including myself. Like when I used to get things brought to me at my desk, if I read it and I didn't understand it, I'm like, the person who wrote this didn't understand it.
Yeah.
And so I knew that I had to get really dialed in on what it meant and what we were trying to accomplish. So I was sitting there and I was thinking about it, and you're going to laugh, but it was Amazon meets Costco. It was what I came up with.
Nice.
And Amazon was the click, 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 it's done. Okay. So I was looking at the ease at which people go to Amazon. And the Costco is, you don't go into Costco expecting to find 25 different brands. You know, there's a certain base level of quality. You know, the customer service is second to none. If you walked in there and you were unhappy, they're going to take care of you. And if you're looking for toothpaste, there's three different kinds, for example. And so when I was sitting at my desk and I was like, how am I going to build this business and what does it look like? I literally said, it's Amazon meets Costco of promotional products. So I don't want you to have to sift through 1,000 different pens. Let us do that work for you. We're going to vet it for quality. We're going to vet it for like, yeah, the ink's not going to run out in a day. Yeah, it's not going to break, you know, all those kinds of things. And then give you sort of the price points. Okay, if you need best in class, here's an option. If you need something that fits the bill, but you need it to fit your budget, here's the option. And, you know, trust us to do the work behind the scenes. So that's kind of how I came up with. So when you ask how many products, right now we have over 1,100 products on our website. But I've tried to sort of work with the team to say, don't give them 16 different black backpacks, right? Find a supplier that aligns with us, find a product that aligns with us, find it being made of materials that align with us for a backpack that's sort of a good price point. And then when you look at the best category, okay, well, it's made completely of recycled materials and the company is actually, there's a give back program and, you know, 1% for the planet and da, 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 da. And so now you're amplifying the impact of the spend when you get into the best category. So this water bottle, nobody can see me, but I've got a water bottle on my desk and there's a give code on the bottom and a website and you can track the water projects that they are donating to through GPS and pictures. Right on from this water bottle. That would be in sort of a best category. So now all of a sudden you spend a dollar, but how have you amplified the impact of that spend in a way that's impacting global projects? And those are the kinds of things that we look at and we uncover and we communicate.
What about your quote unquote? I mean, you don't really have competition, but if you look at pens, I guess there's other people that are selling all different kinds of pens. You've raised the bar based on it being ethical. How has that impacted the other guys selling pens?
So there's always competition. Interestingly enough, I don't think of other promotional product suppliers in the sustainable space as my competition. I see them as partners. Because if they're successful, then what we define as success, we're getting there quicker.
Yes.
So I actually just got an email from my competition just before this meeting saying, I missed you in Vegas because the International Promotional Product Show was in Vegas last week. I missed you in Vegas. And it says, I'm looking at my thing. It says, catch up next week. And that is a company that sells sustainable promotional products. And we got on a call just before Christmas with somebody and they said, oh, we've used XYZ company before, but we want to talk to you. And I'm like, wait, hold on. That's a really good company. We're not looking to mow their lawn. What's the problem?
I love because this.
I'm not interested. It's a big, bad world out there and there's so much opportunity. I am not interested in going to people that are to organizations that are doing the same sort of thing as we are doing and trying to steal their customers. Because that is counterproductive to what our definition of success is.
Absolutely. And so how did that story end? Did they explain that maybe they're just looking for a better price or what?
No, because even if it was price, I'm like, no, sorry, we don't compete on price. Either you understand how we sort of do business or you don't. And they said, no, 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 we'll still do business with them. There's just certain areas in ways that you might be able to help us differently, like the way that you're working in the US, for example, or whatever. And I was like, okay, but I just want you to know, like, we are not interested in trying to garner business from XYZ company because we respect everything they do. They are top shelf. They're doing a great job. And we're going to go over here. because I don't think anybody benefits with us trying to steal. I found that with the B Corp community when we first became a B Corp and they had a holiday gifting webinar. And so I went in and there was not a bunch, but there was a couple of other B Corp promotional products companies. And I just got into one of the breakout rooms. I'm like, I'm tapping out. Like, you guys got this covered. We don't need to be competing with each other. And so that's my approach to competition, but there's always competition. And what I find, let the market decide, yeah, right? And so we do what we do. We don't try and shame anybody. We don't try and necessarily, I would say, like, we're not standing on a soapbox scolding people saying you should be doing XYZ or they're bad, we're good, you should come to us. There's none of that. It's, this is how we approach the market. And if that speaks to you, we'd love to help you. And if you are looking for the cheapest pen, we're probably not your people. And that's okay. I'm not going to judge you for needing the cheapest pen. That's what you need to do. But if you want to have a conversation about how we approach the market, we're wide open. And if that speaks to you, great. And if it doesn't, okay. Because it's a $25 billion industry. We don't need to close every deal. Our job is, how do we find the people that align with us in terms of the value that we want to bring into this world with our businesses? Because I looked at it and I said, when I was, you know, sitting down and, you know, I did the Costco versus Amazon and all that kind of stuff, what I really looked at was, we as individuals, where we're able to, are voting with our dollars and making purchase decisions that are beneficial to the planet and that sort of thing. And I'm like, that's great. Like, that's really good that we're doing that. But we're never going to move the needle. What we really need to do is harness the power, the spending power of corporations into supply chains where we can move the needle. So that's really, so we're not, you know, I do have some competitors that won't sell, for example, to oil and gas, or like they choose the kind of people that they'll work with. And we very much look at it like, how do we harness your spending power into supply chains? We're not going to judge you for what you do, because guess what? Like, our house isn't heated by oil, but there is gas. I do have 100% electric car, but my husband has a truck, you know, like, we need fossil fuels right now to keep the world going, but how do we take the mass amounts of profits that they're making and the money that they're making in that industry and channel it into supply chains where they're paying fair wages and where they're thinking about? And so we come from a place of no judgment. We're just trying to harness the spending power of corporations and governments into a way that can move the needle, because I think individually we're getting there, but we need easier ways to help organizations make those decisions.
So if you've got auditors out there doing the auditing work on these suppliers that you are considering working with, what does a failing grade look like? Like, what are some specific maybe stories or concrete examples you can give us, Tara, that's like, well, it all looked good, but you don't want to work with them because of this? Like, sort of, what are they looking at in terms of them making the grade for you?
Well, so there's the audits, and then there's even the level above that. Like, I remember when I first started, I was like, okay, different products. I called up a company that was making wooden toothbrushes.
Okay.
Because if you think about the waste with toothbrushes and everything else. So I called up and I said, I'd like to speak to the people in your compliance department and that sort of thing. And the person who answered the phone, I did call actually. She said, well, what is it you're looking for? And I said, I need to understand where these are made. I want, you know, your audit reports, all this sort of thing. She goes, well, what would you like them to say, dear? Because we're in the decoration business. We can make the box say anything you want. I swear to God, that happened to me.
Interesting.
And I was like, wow. We're just living in a world where trust is at an all-time low. Lying has been normalized. I won't talk about the guy on the south of the border, but it's almost like normal to lie. And I was like, wow. What kind of corporate culture? Like, that's not a partner we want.
No.
And as part of our corporate culture, we have a term. It's okay to fire clients too. So I give the staff the power to fire a client. And one of my proudest moments, and I've mentioned this before in an interview, was somebody blasted one of our staff because something went wrong with their order. And I've never been so proud as to the response that that email, because they said, "We are very sorry this order went wrong, but we don't tolerate speaking unkindly to our people." And that was a staff member that felt empowered to be able to say that to the client.
That leads me to a big word on the wall, respect. And that for you, Tara, and for the culture you've created, the people who work with you and around you, all through the supply chain, it's about respect. Maybe tell me about that word respect and why it's so important to you. And obviously in that situation with that particular employee.
Well, geez, that goes way back, honestly, to just how I was brought up. And, you know, my father and mother, two of the most beautiful people on the planet, I'm just so incredibly fortunate to have been brought up in a household like that. But my father and mother taught me from a very, very young age, just because somebody has a different opinion than you doesn't make them wrong and you right. Like, it was just one of those lessons that I learned at a very, very young age. Be open-minded. Do not judge. Everybody comes at things from a different perspective. And you don't have to agree with them, but you have to respect. And it was just something that was just always very much our household. And, you know, I remember my father coming home, he was an entrepreneur, and him coming home and asking me about my textbooks one time. And I'm like, why? And he said, oh, I had a guy, you know, come in today, apply for a job, and he seemed too young. And I asked him, why was he applying for a job? And he said, well, I have to work because, you know, there's no father in my household and I have to. So my father's like, okay, I'll make you a deal. I'll hire you, but you have to go to school and finish your education. And so my dad, to stranger, like, he was paying for him to get his high school leaving and he was getting him his textbooks and that sort of thing.
Amazing. I was going to go there. Growing up in Montreal in the 70s and 80s with immigrant parents, UK and Ireland. Tell me a little bit about your dad, because he sounds like a fascinating human being in terms of tinkering with electronics. Maybe there's some stories there.
You've been reading some interviews I've done.
I have been doing a little research because I was really, really interested in the stuff that you bring to the table being, you know, where does respect come from? Well, it's embedded from a very, very young age. So therefore, what was the upbringing like in the parents, et cetera? But what about your dad? Because you've said you've grown up in an entrepreneurial family, hence the very high highs and the very low lows of being an entrepreneur. But let's talk about him for a couple minutes.
What a man. And he would be, actually, my husband said to me this morning, in February is my mother's and father's birthdays. And he was like, How old was your father be turning this February? And I said, 100 years old. He was born in 1924.
Wow.
And he passed away in 2015. And he came from poverty like none of us could really even imagine, honestly. No food, no shoes, no, you know, he lived in the country in Ireland. Very, very smart family, like exceptionally bright. His oldest brother, my uncle, he was accepted into university, but didn't go because he couldn't afford any clothes. You know, that sort of like just super smart. He ended up going on to university. It's just an amazing family, honestly, and what they came from and what they accomplished. And my father was a hoot. Like, he was just always sort of different. Like, he had really long hair. He looked a little bit like the wizard on the alphabet box. He had a ponytail and he wore old jeans. He wasn't, you know, interested in impressing anybody. He was just sort of really down to earth, kind person. And people that met him and were in his presence would literally, like, he was just a special, special human. He really, really was. I was just so lucky to call him my father. And So he had invented a pocket calculator in a cigarette box when he was working at Marconi, and he was an engineer. I went to his university graduation. He put himself through university in night school. I didn't come along until he was 42. And I went to his university graduation because he was working full time with my mom staying home to take care of kids and everything else, and still managed to graduate from university. So he was working as an engineer with Marconi and made this cigarette, this calculator cigarette pack. And someone said, "You should sell that." Anyway, he did go into business, and it was Eaton's that bankrupted him. They put a massive order in for, it was the first pocket calculator to sell in Canada for under $100. Like, there was just nothing that was affordable back then in terms of that can fit in your pocket. So they put in a great big purchase order, and they sort of were building these things. And then Eaton's just never paid. They slow rolled it, as big wealthy companies do. And they went belly up. And so he continued. He just got up the next day and kept going. Like, persistence was his middle name. He had been in the Second World War as a radio officer. He had faced adversity like you wouldn't believe. And he never complained. He was always happy. And he was just like, yeah, I'll just get up and do something else. And he did. And he never, I remember he had a travel agent, and it was this guy in the East End of Montreal. And my God, when I was old enough, like, that guy must have been 88, and Dad still was booking his travel, his business travel through this guy. And I said to him, "Dad, like, you know, you could probably get somebody a little closer and would," and Dad's like, no. He helped me when I went bankrupt, and I will never, ever, ever forget it. You know, like, he was like an elephant. He didn't forget the people that were there for him when he did go bankrupt, and just the integrity that he had and the way he showed up was quite spectacular. And he ended up being, you know, he was never Elon Musk or anything like that, but he did invent he put the black stripe on the back of the credit card. So
the mag stripe.
He was the magstripe guy. So he built the first credit card authorization terminal. I remember I like screwing them onto old phones as making money for Christmas presents, going into his office on Saturdays and screwing the magstripe thing onto the old clunky phones.
Wow. So. Absolute brilliance. But it sounds like exactly the most incredible entrepreneurial spirit that would have just absolutely seeped out of him to you as his daughter. Tara, people must love working with you, for you. How big is your staff now at Ethical Swag?
Not everybody would love. I'm so far from perfect, and I'm figuring it out still. I'm a work in progress, let me tell you. I do hope that I show up with some humility and some, you know, I recognize when I do things wrong, and I'm first to put my hand up and say, "Ooh, I really messed that up," or "I said too much," or "Geez, did I?" Sometimes I can be a little forceful and people take what I'm saying the wrong way. And I'm like, "Oh, geez, help me be better." You know, I'd love to think that it's all, you know, ice cream and apple pie, but, I'm still figuring it out, honest to God. I come from I truly recognize that I got a lot to learn. And I've tried to create an environment where people can sort of put up their hand and go, "Call me out," just like they'd call anybody else out, right? We're kind of doing it together. We have a team of 13 now, and we're just hiring a couple more. So, you know, we're slow but steady over the last couple of years. We're not sort of looking to raise a whole bunch of money and have sort of massive growth. We're being very purposeful about how we grow to make sure that somebody doesn't call up and land that great $500,000 deal, but throw all of our principles out the window just to get the sale. Like, again, they can fire customers. They live and breathe our mission. That's what our team really care about, and they embody it, and they're amazing, and I love every one of them. And we're all learning together, honestly. We're figuring it out. I'd love to say I've got all the answers, but they make me stronger, honestly.
So, Terry, you were working in professional sports, NBA and NHL, and you went to a sponsorship conference in Chicago in 1996, and you heard a man by the name of Horst Reichelbacher. Am I even remotely close? Reichelbacher, who was the founder, is the founder of Aveda. How did this change your life? This conference in Chicago, this man took the stage and gave a keynote, and all of a sudden your life was different.
Wow, you've done your research. Absolutely. I love this. I love this. That was when it was a light bulb moment for me, honestly. It was so amazing. I was still young in my career. And it was a sponsorship conference and everybody's getting up. And the guy sitting next to me was from Cirque du Soleil, actually. That was when Cirque du Soleil was getting started and their head of sponsorship was sitting next to me. Sponsorship was relatively sort of young back then and it was cool. And I was like 5 years into my career and there was already things I was seeing that I really liked. And there was also things that I saw that I didn't really like, but I don't even know that I was able to articulate it before that conference, to be honest. It was sort of like, ooh, that doesn't make me feel really good. Or, ooh, I don't like, you know, that. Or so Horst got up and he was one of the keynotes and it was such a light bulb moment. Cause he was like, I used to see my wife put lipstick on and then it would be gone 20 minutes later. And I'd be like, ooh, she must have ingested that stuff that was on her lips. What is that lipstick made of? Mm. And it's all kinds of petrochemicals. And he's like, that can't be good for my wife, ingesting these petrochemicals. So then he looked at it and said, well, how do I build something that's more plant-based? And this is when people were not talking about this stuff. And he said, I went to the tribes in Brazil and I said, okay, the face paint that you're putting on your face and that sort of thing, how are you getting those pigments from the flowers? And how are you doing that? And so then he was like, I'm going to help you plant crops, but I can't be your only customer because then I would have too much power over you. So I'm going to help you develop a business here where you have multiple clients and I'm just one of them. And so it was like this long process. The Aveda story is actually, it was mind-blowing for me as I'm listening to him tell the story of how he went into the makeup business because of his wife ingesting petrochemicals in her lipstick and how he was helping tribes develop business to get the pigments out of the plants and all this. And he said, and then all of a sudden I'm really, and it was hair. It wasn't just lipstick. It was, hair products and everything. And he said, then I've got all these employees and I'm like, what are they eating? And so my cafeteria, I was like, we need to get better food in our cafeterias. And it was just, it was mind blowing to me. So then he had health food cafeterias and then he had wellness centers and he had spas and, but it was all from this place of how do we do the best thing that we can? And then he turned it back onto sponsorship. And so he's like, so I will not sponsor anything unless it aligns for what we stand for, which is ultimately why sponsorship exists. It's taking two brands and aligning them and amplifying both their stories in a way that really, and I was working in sponsorship in professional sports and I was like, wow, okay. And we'd made some decisions. I worked with amazing people, like amazing. And that's a whole nother podcast. Like I was just so fortunate in my early career that I worked with some amazing minds that did the right things. But I remember Imperial Tobacco coming to us and they wanted to give us millions of dollars. And we were like, oh, we really need the money right now. But like, that does not align with us, right? So making that decision about not having a cigarette. And back in the day, back in the early 90s, you actually had meetings like that because you're trying to do something and somebody's here like, here, I'm going to give you a pile of money. And oh, wouldn't that make life a lot easier?
Yeah.
But no, we're not going to do that. Right. And then I heard how Horst was building, how he had built his company on these principles. I'm like, oh, we need more of that. And so that was a real light bulb moment for me. And then I remember going up the elevator after the keynote and everybody gets in the elevator and they were like, well, that was a waste of time. Well, that was a pain. Like, I know, I was shocked at the reaction. Shocked. Come on. I swear to God. But this is back in the early 90s and it was, people weren't thinking that way. And I was lit up. And I'm in this elevator and you know when, you know, something breaks up and everyone piles into the elevator together and you're like shoulder to shoulder. And the general conversation was, oh, that was a waste of time. And I was vibrating. It was just, there you go.
That was just not how business was done then in 1996. But yet, here's somebody who's showing a better way to do business.
And he was proving it. It just showed that there was another way. And then I always had that in my back pocket. When I build a business, it's going to be a different kind of business. And then over 30 years of my career, it's just got worse. Like, oh my gosh. Like, I'm blown away at how we've sort of thrown some core principles mm-hmm. out the window. Mm-hmm. So
that's very upsetting. I mean, at your core, it shakes you. You'd like to say that profit is a byproduct of success and not its definition.
Yep.
I'm going to clip that little piece off of my notes and keep it on my wall. Can we talk about bravery, Tara?
Sure.
So when you decided to, and I quote, give up the golden handcuffs, I hadn't heard that term for a while. And I thought, oh, yeah. I remember that. And leave your corporate job. You had friends and colleagues ask you, like, can I help you? Do you need a job? But you were leaving to start Ethical Swag. So I think that unto itself was brave. So let's talk about what does bravery mean to you, Tara? There's no right or wrong. This is a very personalized answer, I'm sure.
I think it's easy to be brave when you've got a lot of people in your life that support you.
I love it. So who was around you that was believing in you when you decided to start Ethical Swag?
My husband of 33 years this year.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Amazing man. Putting up with me. Anybody that knows me knows it's a special man. my parents, you know, my father had since passed, but oh my God, he was planting seeds for this. Since I was doing my lemonade stands at the age of 10, let me tell you. And it's funny, like he just, when I was in university, he'd fax me a job posting for like the CEO of IBM. And I'm like in my second year of my commerce degree. And I'm like, what's this? And he'd be like, you should apply. Like he was hilarious. He believed I could do anything. And when you get that kind of, just through osmosis your whole life, you kind of believe it,
yeah,
honestly.
Yeah.
And so I consider myself, it's funny because I find so many entrepreneurs talk about this adversity that I've faced and I've conquered and I've come out on top. Mm. And I'm sitting back here going, yeah, no, that's not my story. Like you don't actually have to have all this adversity to be driven and passionate and you can do it, but I do think it's the people you surround yourself with either pull you up or push you down. And I've just been so lucky in my life to be around people that push me up. And I just hope for everybody to have that. And so that's the kind of culture that I want to build in my business. That's how my husband and I have brought up our kids. It's the way that we approach life.
So Tara, what's next for you? Maybe personally, what's next for you? Ethical Swag? Is there something on the horizon that's kind of eating at you like, yeah, I'd really like to do that?
So Ethical Swag, I'm a firm believer. It's not what you say, it's what you do that matters.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not what you say, it's what you do that matters. And it's hard to be what you can't see. So those are two things that really drive me. And so Ethical Swag's still a bit of a toddler in my mind. You know, it's great, but I need to get it to the next level so that I can say, see, you can build a profitable business with all of these values and all of these things that are important, and look at the impact you can have. So that's what success looks like to me. And it's not how successful I am. It's how successful the people working in the business are. That's really what drives me. And then after that, it's about then being able to talk about the fact, like, see, I dreamt it, I did it, I believed in it, but it wasn't just me. It was all the people that believed in it. And now that's going. Now, how do we get into the incubators, into the business schools, and into the next generation to say, stop looking at the Elon Musks of the world and the Jeff Bezos of the world as successful? And how do we build the next generation of business leaders that are thinking about this? And that's how we're going to solve the big problems of today, is by the next generation being inspired to do things, not how they're being taught in their MBAs, as far as I'm concerned, and not what they're being taught in the incubators and by their mentors. It's how do we demonstrate there is another way? And that's where real success will happen, is when we get that next generation inspired and they're there. Like, they're looking at us old fogies and saying, I don't want to do what you did.
Yeah.
I need more value. And like, I can't afford to buy a house. And what's the world come to? And, but they don't necessarily see a path forward. And so really my goal is to demonstrate that there is a path forward. It's not all doom and gloom. The sky isn't falling. We will get through this, just as we've got through lots of things in the past. And let's do it together. And let's, you know, let's collectively, people of my generation, help show the path for the next generation. Because that's really, this is generational. It's taken us a little while to mess up the globe. It's going to take us a little while to fix it.
Oh, yeah.
So let's be patient. Let's have fun. Let's be inspirational. Let's do it. But let's at least get on the path in the right direction.
Incredible. For the people of the globe that are listening to this incredible interview, Tara, how do they find you? How do they connect with you? How do they go on Ethical Swag's website and look at pens or shirts or coffee mugs that align with the values of their company? So here's the call out for you, your business, however you would like the world to connect with you. Even a phone call, maybe even a phone call.
Old school phone calls. Absolutely. We do. We have a 1-800 number on our website. Phone us. We like talking. Customer service is one of the pieces that are in my background. And I'm like, I hate these websites where you can't get a person, right? That's really important that you can call us and you'll get a person to answer you. So ethicalswag.com is our website. We own Ethical Swag for Instagram, Facebook. When Elon Musk bought Twitter, I said bye-bye to Twitter, X. I just said, you know what? We don't need to be on this platform. We don't really align with how he's sort of approaching things. He's doing a lot of really great things, but just from, it's just not aligned. So just decided that we would step away from Twitter. But we are on Instagram, we're on Facebook, I'm on LinkedIn, and I love to hear from people all the time. And I'm just looking for my people, people that align with me and what we're trying to build. And then together we will just build it bigger and better.
Thank you, Tara. From the bottom of my heart, you have inspired me. You've given me hope. Sometimes being out there in the big world of business, you do get to a depressed doom and gloom state of where's the world going and this is just awful. But then there's rays of sunshine and hope in your eyes and in your business. So thank you so much for coming on Breaking Brave and telling the world about the great things you're doing. And I wish you nothing but respect and eternal success.
Thank you so much for the interest. I really appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for listening. For updates between episodes, I'd encourage you to join my mailing list, which you can do at either marilynbarefoot.com or breakingbrave.show. At most once a month, at least once a quarter, you'll receive an update on the latest resources, topics, and information I've found either super helpful or amazingly impactful. That's it for now. See you next time.